Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And, you know, here we're going through the newest Gary Renard book called The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions. And we've actually made some progress on this book.
But
we're getting there. So I am going to mute my mic and do as I just told you I was going to do. And maybe you can let us know what you've been up to. And if you want to, you can start reading.
Okay. Let me find the right spot here. And I will continue where we left off. I have us on page 164. So, and that is in the chapter called The Importance of Mind, which we've been reading in for a few weeks now, I think, since we're taking a scenic tour of the book. So I'll pick up where we left off. God did not make this world and has nothing to do with it. I think we read this and now we're just rereading a little bit, but this is a real particularly good paragraph as I recall. And one that Lynn and I already commented on how impactful that concept has been to both of us and I'm sure to a lot of other people. Particularly those who have, bought into the conventional religious, formal religious idea that God has something to do with anything in the world of space, time, bodies, separate personalities and individualities, and certainly the whole thought system of sin, guilt, fear, death, and separation. So anyway, let me start that paragraph over again.
Yeah, it's so easy to blame him. So
the perfect scapegoat, you know, something that we've made invisible due to our insane minds and forgotten that we did that. But fortunately, there's the same part of our mind that can remember that God had absolutely nothing to do with the insanity that we made up in a dream, which therefore makes perfect forgiveness possible, because if it never happened, then, well, it's much easier to forgive.
Okay. And actually, I mean, that's the answer to my question. You know, when I was, probably 11 or 12 years old, and I went to parochial school, I went to Catholic school, and I just started asking this question about, you know, I had always wondered when I was littler, but, you know, I finally got bold enough to ask the nun, well, you know, what kind of God did this? This does not seem like a very good thing, the way that God arranged this world. And I was promptly sent across the street to talk to Father, because, you know, obviously I was being possessed by some demon or the other. But that question was never answered. I never got a good answer, you know, that, you know, this big, strong God who's all-powerful would be picking on little us who have absolutely no power whatsoever and putting us in a place where we all we can do is suffer and die. Mm-hmm. You know, it just seemed ridiculous. I couldn't even imagine what kind of God would do that. And so the Course in Miracles was the first time I ever saw, well, God didn't do it. And what a relief that was. I mean, that was it for me. As soon as I figured that out, I was like, oh, well then, everything else now makes sense. It just answered all the questions for me, actually.
God
didn't make this, God didn't do this, and I did it to myself, and now I know that I can undo it. That's pretty amazing. That's a wonderful thought.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And it was a pivotal moment for me too when I first read Gary's first book. And I was like, oh, I knew that. Somehow I knew that was in the course, but I think I was, you know, sort of, my internal resistance to the idea, because of my investment in wanting to make the world work, you know, on ego's terms, was still so strong. It was basically, I kind of like had a, what's the word, like a scotoma? Is it so like the, you know, the, where the data comes in, but you don't really register what it means. And I think I was doing that with A Course in Miracles. I think I was reading the part that, was talking about how God has no cognizance of duality, and so the pure non-duality, I think it took Gary's books for it to really, you know, the light bulb moment to flash across my mind. I kind of like finally got it, that if God had something to do with duality, then we'd all be goners. I mean, then it really would be hopeless. But the real hope comes from recognizing that our true identity exists outside of space and time, and it is completely shared, completely innocent, completely whole, and completely intact, despite whatever we seem to be doing in this dream of space, time, and bodies, and a world ruled by laws of physics, which are clearly insane. And other laws, you know, actually the laws of physics are probably some of the least, seemingly least insane, but it's all pretty crazy, you know, how stars are born and then they collapse and die into supernovas and black holes and all, you know, just, I mean, from the very large to the very small, it's all just kind of, well, what for? You know, why? Why? Which is probably the question you were asking in your parochial school. You know, it's like, well, what? How could there be an insane God that would make a meaningless world? You know, it's like, no. It's of course, Miracles clearly clarifies and aligns us to the fact that no, that really couldn't possibly happen except in a dream. And so, unless we're dealing with dream stuff, all that's left is perfect clarity, but that's not usually where we come from, is it?
No, it's not. So even though, like, when I was a little kid, when I was really young, I used to have visions, and I had Jesus actually came to me and asked me to help him to save the world, and I had no idea what that meant. But I said yes, and I went through my whole life feeling guilty because I couldn't save the world. I kept trying and trying and trying. And, it, you know, there's just so much to save. And, uh-huh. You know, I went from, you know, save the whale, save the indigenous people, save the rainforest, save the, you know, try to save everything. And, you would just go insane doing that, which is, you know, probably what half the world is right now. But, you know, finally finding the Course of Miracles and realizing not only did God not make the world, but also, the salvation of the world is this, that I'm doing it to myself. You know, the secret of salvation is, you know, it's all about my own personal relationship with my father, mm-hmm. and my brother and sister, whatever you want, that relationship that comes from knowing my true self, my true being, what I am. And so these lessons that we're doing right now, all the ones that are what is the world, what is forgiveness, you know, and it comes up to the one that says, what am I? And, you know, that coming to know what I am is the key, really, to recognizing that this world is harmless, or like today's lesson, I'm in danger nowhere in this world, mm-hmm. Because it doesn't exist. And what I think I am it doesn't exist. And what I really am is invulnerable. So, you know, all powerful, all creative, whatever.
I mean, that's really our true estate, isn't it? But we don't hang out there that much. And of course, Miracles is just a very gentle, gradual curriculum that helps us ease into that and minimizes the fear by helping us look at the shared interest that we all have, and by gradually letting go of the dysfunctional identity that doesn't work for us, the what's in it for me at the expense of everyone and everything else in the universe, and replacing it with a shared identity that is a reflection of the idea of oneness, that is a much more comforting approach, where we can finally recognize that the only thing that the the separate identity thought system has brought us is some, you know, misery in all its various forms and
exactly.
suffering. Yeah.
Exactly. So knowing this, and did you read this whole paragraph, or did we just stop right there?
You know, I think we could probably. I think we. I don't think because we did read the whole paragraph. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and finish reading this paragraph.
Okay. Why don't I start it over, just because it sounds good.
Yeah, okay. It is amazing.
Okay. God did not make this world and has nothing to do with it. God knows where you really are, safe at home. You're being prepared to awaken to a higher life form, which is your real life. But like God, your real life has no form. It is perfect oneness. There are no restrictions. There are no edges or barriers or limits of any kind. There's no friction to impede the glorious extension of your love. And everyone you've ever loved is there, every person and every animal, not as bodies, but in perfect oneness. So you are aware that nobody and nothing could ever be left out. And because you are one and not bodies, you are actually closer to them than you could ever be in this world. Bodies cannot really join. The Course teaches that true union is possible only at the level of the mind. And, yeah, it's kind of hard for us to fathom that, but Gary's teachers do it in other ways. You know, it's like, imagine, you know, the most wonderful, romantic, amorous, encounter we could imagine. You know, I'm thinking of like the, Paul Simon Kodachrome song, you know. If you could take all the girls I knew when I was single and brought them together for one night, well, it's really beyond anything that's physical or sexual. And of course, Miracles alludes to that early on. I remember the one thing one of very few things that I did read about from the, I think it was the Urtext that was talking about the physical experience. I think it was replaced with something. Maybe sexual is really replaced with physical, but anyway. But the whole idea is, you know, we try in this world to have experiences.
Distortion of miracle impulses.
That's the one. That's the one. Yes, thank you. But no matter how wonderful an experience might be, it's kind of like a little desert bloom that quickly appears and disappears, and there's always a feeling of lack or incompletion. Because either space or time is always extremely limited, and you know the I was kind of thought, well, if sex was such a great thing, and not that there's anything wrong with it, you don't have to do it once, you know. But in this case, what we're talking about here is beyond anything physical, whether it's just getting together with friends or an amorous relationship or anything where we feel a joy in connection, it can't obviously be limited to anything specific for it to be perfect communication, for it to be perfect oneness, for it to be perfect sharing. And I think that's what this paragraph is reminding us of, that what we really are couldn't possibly be limited. And because that's true, the experience of a peace and a joyousness that's beyond any kind of suffering or any kind of negative aspects to it is not only possible, but it's truly what we are. I mean, that's what we've covered over, and that's what we're really afraid of, which is insane, of course. But that's what the A Course in Miracles is trying to tell us, is this is an insane world where we attempt to join where it can never really satisfy us, where it can never really truly be what we want, and we've covered that over so profoundly that we think that there's still something in the world that is gonna do it for us. Whether it's sex, drugs, rock and roll, money, possessions, the perfect home, the perfect job, the perfect partner, the perfect state of physical health and fitness. I mean, all these things that there's nothing wrong with. It's just they're not gonna do it. They're not gonna satisfy us ultimately. So why beat that dead horse, so to speak?
Well, yeah, and if you put all those together in that Kodachrome moment, and it still doesn't meet your imagination, then obviously you got to figure out that there's more to it than what you're perceiving. And
exactly.
This whole idea that there's something in the world that can satisfy the Son of God, it is ludicrous. but we can't give up on trying to be satisfied by the world, because once you have recognized that that love is the only thing that is, the only thing that's real, and the only thing that has any meaning, and it's not the love that obviously we celebrate here in the world, it's something way beyond that. Once you have that experience, this is why ego fights it so much, because once you have that experience, you will never be able to go back. You always know, and if you've ever had that, that experience of having a connection, something spiritual happened to you that was out of this world or out of your normal experience or the experience, whatever, that you know that that's true, and you'll never stop until you find it again, or you'll just give everything up to only have that. You know, that's really what we're talking about, because once you realize that's all that's real, then nothing here, I mean, everything here is a joke.
Right. And it doesn't mean that we stop doing the things that we're doing. It doesn't, since A Course in Miracles never talks about changing behavior, it never addresses behavior directly. It basically suggests that the only place we're really going to be truly happy in a truly sustainable way, to use some environmental jargon there, is to really get back to the place in our mind where we thought we threw God under the bus. Look at that idea with Holy Spirit, aka Jesus, and of the Course, and see, no, that really didn't happen. We don't need to continue to beat ourselves up for this unconscious guilt, but we don't do that all at once, and typically, and we have to just kind of gradually look at the ways in which we hang on to a feeling of victimhood, martyrdom, and suffering, and how we project it out, and that becomes our classroom. We look at all the things that we do where we foist the unconscious guilt that we don't want to look at onto other people or other groups of people or situations or political parties or, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, just, it could be anything in the world that is what we identify with is not self. And that's it. That's fair game. And it gets a lot of cultural reinforcement, because we can always find, you know, groups of people that say, oh, absolutely, that's your victimizer. Yeah, there it is. You know, it's living Technicolor, and you have every right to be upset. And sure enough, it would seem that, you know, those things then become the perfect scapegoats. But a scapegoat can never really satisfy us. We really want to return to the lambscape instead of the goatscape in our mind, and find that's really the only place where we're truly at peace. As long as we have an opponent, as long as there's something, you know, adversarial going on in our mind, and which is the whole premise of a dualistic thought system, we're never going to be truly peaceful. And that's what A Course in Miracles gently and persistently and uncompromisingly suggest that we keep coming back to again and again and again until we have, you know, essentially allowed the Holy Spirit to look with us at all the craziness in our mind and let go of our identification with that. It doesn't mean we change behavior. It doesn't mean we stop eating or enjoying pretty sunsets or I like to walk on the beach and take photographs of really cool patterns in the sand. And I know that in truth, they don't mean anything, but it's kind of fun. And I have fun sharing those with friends and family. And I have a website about sacred geometry, and I think it's kind of cool, all the different shapes. But I know that ultimately the only thing that really means anything with those is the meaning that I give it, that can bring us back to, you know, a recognition of our perfect oneness. And so that's kind of how I have learned to approach anything that I do. It's just like I can do all the same things that I used to do, but with an added insight that my identity doesn't have to be tied up in those things, and I can see peace instead of some kind of a conflict involved in whatever activity I happen to be doing. You know, no matter what that is. So
absolutely.
I can find the lesson. Yeah.
So. That's perfect. And because you got to be doing something. What are you going to do? And even if you did, see, this is the beauty of the script is written. This is why I always come back to the script is written. Because all of these things were already done. You already walked on that beach and saw all those things and took those pictures and did all that stuff. That was something that happened long ago in this dream of a world that we made up that was over in an instant. It came and went. It's gone. We are reviewing it right now. So do you think you could do anything different? Do you think that you could, today I think I'm going to go to the dream about where I'm walking on Omaha Beach. Or, you know, no, you can't change what it is. So you're going to be doing it anyway.
Uh-huh.
But now who are you doing it with? You know,
exactly.
You know that everything that you're doing is a part of God's plan for salvation now, because you've turned yourself over to that, turned your will over to that, and made that your priority, your thought. And the only reason that you're, you know, alive doing the things that you're doing is for that very purpose, to see what about the world. You know, we just read about it in the workbook. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? What is really happening here? This is what you're here seeing. Because even though intellectually you understand, you know, it's not real and it's a dream and illusion, to have the experience of it as that is going to shift you in a way in which you are then going to be able to see the reality behind all of the things that come, all the symbols that are shown to you, and the truth of the situation becomes so clear to you that you recognize immediately that, as today's lesson says, I am in danger nowhere in this world, because nothing in this world can touch you, because it is not real, it doesn't exist. You have the experience of that because you've given over your desire to make it real, or to make it the true experience of life.
Mm-hmm. You know, exactly.
You gave that up. Now you're being shown. Here's how it is.
You're no longer invested in the outcome of having something in space and time have the power over your mind and your identity to somehow magically make your little S self happy. Yeah. So because you're shifting your identity to the larger, the capital S self, which includes everyone, and that in truth is completely immune and independent of anything that happens or doesn't happen in the world, and that's where the real freedom lies. And the real freedom, again, is not freedom or liberty in the world. It's choices among illusions doesn't really satisfy us. It's the choice to go beyond illusion and to see that there's an identity that we all share that is completely independent of whatever happens or doesn't happen in the world. And that's easy. And that's why forgiveness is easy, because it's based on letting go of what never truly happened in truth. And, it, you know, when we see the logic of that, it's like, well, yeah, why didn't I do that before? Well, it's because we were resistant. Yeah, we were very resistant.
And why are we resistant? Because ego is well aware that once you've seen the man behind the curtain, mm-hmm. you're not going to unsee him.
Right.
You know, once you see this, it's the end of it.
Yep.
It can't hold you anymore. So, of course, it's going to just be terrified of it and give you every reason why not.
8:55 a.m.
My alarm. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze now. And in fact, close my mic and blow my nose, and you can read if you like.
I'll read the next paragraph. Okay. Persa says, don't ever let anyone teach you that you can bypass the mind. Jay tells you in the course that your mind's ability to make a choice, your power to choose, is your true power in this world. Those who want to bypass the mind are giving up the only power they have, and it's really the only real choice is to choose against the ego. I'm just a little quick aside there. Pure non-dualistic thinking with the Holy Spirit reverses the thinking of the world. And the choice you're supposed to make is spelled out for you at the end of the text. And the choice always involves the way you think about other people. Choose once again what you would have him be, remembering that every choice you make establishes your own identity as you will see it and believe it is. So there's the big, bright floodlight, huge, 100-foot tall letters, blazing across our mind, the big clue that says, hey, it's in our relationships. It's in our relationship to everyone and everything. And it has nothing to do with what other people think about us, but it has everything to do about what we think about them. And if we are seeing all of spirit in everyone instead of some, you know, mediocre subset, we're going to see all of spirit in ourselves, because A Course in Miracles suggests that this world is a projection, and if ideas don't leave their source, and those ideas are always and forever in our mind, then that just means that we're not going to escape anything that we dish out that is less than wonderful, but by the same token, neither will we escape the assessment where we see beyond the facade of behavior and form and what appears to happen in space and time, and allow ourselves to, with Holy Spirit's help, to see the beauty and the perfection, all the loving kindnesses, like one of those early text prose in the early text reminds us that have been saved for us, you know, cleansed of their errors and perfected, because anything that isn't eternal doesn't get through that filter. And the pure eternal loving kindness that we really are and have is kept for us, because that's all we truly are. But that's enough. That's everything. Anything less than that is the nothing that A Course in Miracles suggests that we just look at gently with our inner kindness teacher, and not in any kind of a derisive way, but just kind of looking at it objectively and say, you know, that isn't working for me. I can afford to let go of identifying what doesn't work for me, which is the condemnations and the judging thoughts that assess anyone or anything as being less than perfect spirit. And when we can see that it's only those condemning thoughts that injure us, we start to learn that, you know, that's maybe not my best interest to hang on to those. Maybe I should drop those.
and all of those are like characters. All the persons that we're seeing, the world that we're seeing, are props and characters, mm-hmm. and we're the ones who are making up the story. That's what's so phenomenal. It doesn't matter, you know, look at the world today and look at, of course, you know, I'm looking at politics in this country, and it's always been this way. It's just never really been so blatant or black and white, I guess, as it is right now, because everyone is having their own idea about whether what's happening now is good or bad, and they are seeing in the world this like self-fulfilling prophecy. If they think everything is wrong and going bad, they're looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, we got to fix things. If they're thinking that it's good and going well, they're looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, we better keep it this way, and you idiots better stay out of my way. And they both are looking at the exact same thing, but because they have different viewpoints, and it's not just one or two, it's there's a whole spectrum of point of view of this stuff. So it could be, you know, I like this guy because, you know, he's, you know, keeping immigration down, or, you know, I don't like this guy because he's hurting immigrants, or I like this guy because he's helping the economy, or I don't like this guy because he's making a big deficit, or, you know, but they're all looking at the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They are the ones who are making up the story about what it is they see. It's so clear when you see it that way, and then bring it home to your own self and recognize that is what I'm doing too. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the same thing, and I'm making up the story, and I'm making up a story about them, and I'm making up a story about this, and then start recognizing how much your experience in this world is your story about your experience in this world. And I recognize this myself from teaching here on ACIM Gather, and sharing my experiences in the world, what I do now, you know, how things work. And I notice that when I have an experience, you know, I go to the grocery store, somebody says something to me, you know, this happens, that happens, and almost immediately my mind goes into, how am I going to tell this story to everyone else so that they will see that there is an insight here? I become the storyteller of the story. And, you know, first off, I made the story up. I'm the one who, you know, had everything to do with what I perceived. I'm responsible for what I see. And then I turn that into a story to try to influence how you see things, mm-hmm. to give you an idea of how to be like me.
It's like puppets and stick figures spinning yarns and you know, forgetting that those stories are just, you know, fiction. They can either be, you know, nightmarish or seemingly, you know, euphoric, but there's always kind of a, you know, a back and forth between those two. There's always going to be some kind of a, you know, not so wonderful ending to the stick figure puppet drama. Only when the puppets realize that they aren't happy being puppets.
Right.
Kind of like Pinocchio, you know, wanted to be a real boy. Well, you know, and there's a lot of movies lately that kind of carry that theme of, you know, the artificially intelligent, robots. I know you've talked about Westworld, and there's tons of others that are kind of similar in the theme of recognizing that, you know, you're in a puppet or a stick figure or a robot or whatever, and it's like, wait a minute, I want to have the real experience. Well, as long as we identify with form, we're going to be identifying with, you know, a puppet, stick figure, dream figure, on the screen, rather than, you know, three-dimensional experience, and eventually we'll get tired of the drama of the stick figure puppet world, and just say, you know, I'd rather have the real experience, which is, I know something that can't possibly change in truth, because the loving kindnesses and all the real beauty, which is, you know, eternal, doesn't change, and that's where we're headed.
Well, yeah, and look at that. You know, you bring up Westworld, which, you know, I'm getting ready to binge watch again, just so I can get ready, you know, because it's just so amazing to me. But you know, the thing about the beings in Westworld is they have recognized the experience that they are not the body. Mm-hmm. They have recognized the experience that what they are exists beyond the body, outside of the body, and independent of the body. Mm-hmm. And so, really, they have it up on us, because, and you see that, you know, in the way it turns out in the end of the second season, is that, you know, they are basically superior to the human, because the human has just such a, limited bandwidth, and what they are, they recognize that they have a bandwidth that is, you know, pretty much, you know, eternal, or you know, it's a whole other kind of existence. So you know, that's, you know, whether or not they intended that to be the experience that you have from watching Westworld, that's definitely the experience I got, because it showed me, this is how you would be if you knew that this body was not what you are. Mm-hmm. And you knew that you existed beyond this and independent of it. This is how you would be. And, you know, it's pretty informative to me. So, yeah. I mean, we started with Rick and Morty last night, so I'm rewatching some really good Rick and Morty, and then I'll go watch some more Westworld. Anyway, so let's get back to our book.
Okay.
So they've just been talking about establishing your own identity. I think I'm going to read this last paragraph and then start with Gary's response. So this is Persa, right? Why does it establish your own identity? That's because of the way the mind works. To review, it's obvious most people are aware only of the conscious mind, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you could go down deep enough into the mind, into Carl Jung's collective unconsciousness, you'd find out that there is only one mind. That's because there's really only one of you. There's just one ego appearing as many. And then Gary says, the Hindu's world of multiplicity. Persa, you have been listening. Good boy. Good boy. So I always laugh every time they say this stuff to him. Oh, you are a good.
They're just mirroring his charming smart aleckiness, right?
I know, it's hilarious. Oh my god.
So no, they can appreciate it.
I'm sure that's just inherent in her being. So because she's Gary. Oh, so anyway. So despite what you see, there's just one of you and one mind, but that presents a problem for you that you can't see. The projection of a universe of time and space that you can see is coming from that one unconscious mind. That's where the projector is hidden. Thus, your unconscious mind knows everything. If that's where everything that you're seeing is coming from, then by definition, on some level, your mind knows everything. Even the truth is buried there, waiting to be remembered. And if the unconscious mind knows everything, then it knows that there is just really just one of you. That's good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Because the mind knows everything, including the fact that there's just one of you, it will interpret anything you think or say, no matter how subtle, about another person to really be about you. Wow, this is a huge thing, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I'm thinking about you is really what I'm thinking about me. Okay. And it will determine how you feel about yourself and ultimately even what you believe you are. That's why the Course says every choice you make establishes your own identity as you will see it and believe it is. That's why the Course emphasizes that as you see Him, you will see yourself. And it's true. So that's the bad news.
Well, it's also the good news, fortunately.
It is also the good news, yeah. Because we
do have a choice of which thought system every moment.
But yeah, so that's to me, really, honestly, Bruce, this is the everyday practice that
absolutely.
I mean, this is what brings about the realization of the truth of it is by constantly reminding myself that whatever I'm thinking about you is really what I'm thinking about myself. What I think you think about me is what I think about myself. And, you know, I realized this. There was a person that, you know, I wanted to be a friend with. They were, you know, a big teacher in the Course, and people respected this person. So, you know, I wanted to be friendly with them. And I started immediately to compare myself to them, and the comparison came up short, as in, you know, I was not as good, couldn't do things as good, wasn't as good a teacher, didn't know as much, all of these things, and what that did was cause me to resent that other person, because I immediately attributed those thoughts to that person. When I looked at them, all I thought about was my own shortcomings, and I imagined that that's what they were looking at and thinking about me too. And so what it really was I was judging that person was judging me. And because I was judging that they were judging me, my judgment of them was very harsh. And I was thinking, you know, they're a fake teacher. They're not a good student of A Course in Miracles. How can they think these harsh things about me? And not a word had been spoken between us. We had not communicated in any way at all. This was all in my own head. And so every time I would, you know, see them or hear, it would be an insinuation that, you know, oh, I'm not good enough. Really, that's what was happening. I would.
Well, as we know, if it's all with some kind of insinuation or infatuation, those are just two sides of the same coin, right?
Yeah.
And so one is thick and one is fat.
It's thick and one is fat. Oh, you're hilarious. But that's true. It is true. You know, it's insane to think that way. And yeah,
it is. It really is. I mean, we do it because we think that there's some kind of benefit we're going to get. We're still holding out, you know, on our mind's bucket list of things that we want to fix in the world or do in the world or whatever. And there's nothing wrong with those. There's nothing, absolutely nothing at all, you know, wrong with making these in insufferably long list of to-dos and must-haves and gotta fixes and all that. You know, your Lynn's plan to rule the world, what Bruce's plan to you know, do the same, you know, whatever. I mean, no matter what form it seems to take, there's nothing wrong with all the strategies that we've made up. It's just that they're silly, you know. They're not evil, sinful, or wicked, as Ken points out. They're just silly. And it's just kind of like the gentle recognition that anything that we attempt to do in this world with the world as, you know, fixing the world or changing the world as the goal is bound to disappoint us. I mean, it's just built into that script, as you say.
Exactly, exactly. So why do we give it so much credence, even when we're Course in Miracles students and, you know, it's time to get over it and do what we're here to do, you know, be the light of the world. So, you know, I just think, because I ask myself this every day, I'm you know, like, what am I doing? Why do I keep doing this? Because, one thing, and I'm just going to say this and move along. One thing is, remember, these are not my real thoughts. The thoughts that come to me in the world are words from the script. They are part of the way the script is written. The thoughts that come to me in the world, in my daily going about my business, are not my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you ever thought, you know, well, maybe you haven't, but I surely have, because I'm a, you know, I am a serial murderer in my mind. Have you ever thought, geez, you know, I just wish I could just kill this person and get them out of my hair? or this, you know, somehow you would just go away. Have you ever thought that kind of a thought about a person and ask yourself, could I really kill somebody? Is that really my thought? Or, you know, is that just some words that are, you know, expressing something that maybe are not serious enough to, you know, make somebody die over it? But still, or I want to kill myself. You know, how many times have I said that? Oh, my God, I just want to kill myself. I wish I could just die. those are not my thoughts.
As Ken Wapnick points out, yes, all those kinds of thoughts are a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. But the most important part, I think, of that sentence, I mean, all parts are important of that phrase, is that it's a non-existent problem. It's only when we start realizing that our real identity is for real and that is what we are and begin to get glimpses of it, then that's when we have something to identify with rather than against. And there's no against in perfect oneness. So even that metaphor kind of falls apart, because there's no polarization in perfect oneness. There's nothing, no opponent, no adversarial kind of thing of happening anywhere. But once we get a glimpse of the idea that what we really are in truth is all one thing and we're all in it together, tag, we're all it, then and experience that with shared interests and with seeing everyone or even just, you know, fleeting instances of seeing specific people as being all of spirit or all perfect or all completely innocent in the eyes of the eternal being that we are, that gives us the impetus to, you know, gradually release our white knuckle grip on an identity that doesn't serve us, which again it's a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, because that identity is something that we've made up, and we made up an incredibly elaborate world of bodies, you know, from birth to death, and all the stuff in between seems so real, and it was designed that way. It was just like the, you know, Matrix movies, where it was made up to keep us mesmerized and hypnotized by a very high production value Technicolor holographic 3D movie that just seems so real that no one in this world, hardly without any exception, has questioned it as being the real deal. Should we continue on?
Yeah, sure. You want to read?
Sure. Gary says, so people are determining how they're going to feel about themselves right now by how they think about other people, whether they're going to be happy or depressed, whether they're going to feel guilty or innocent, or think they're a body or a spirit. It's all determined the same way. Persa, yes. That shows you the power of the mind, the power of choice. The good news is that once you learn about that, you can use it. You can learn how to work with the Holy Spirit and use your power of decision to go home. Gary, superb. So I have an important question that I've asked you before, but I'm wondering if things have changed because of my forgiveness. Would it be possible for me to completely forgive everything and learn all of my lessons in this lifetime? Could I wake up this time instead and not appear to come back again for that final lifetime as you, Persa? Persa. The answer is yes, Gary. It would be possible for you to finish the job in this lifetime. As we've said, the lessons have the same meaning in all dream lifetimes. Only the forms change. You still have time to complete your lessons this time around. You have been doing good, and I like the way you're always turning it up a notch. All of your travels, which are a challenge on their own, along with all the course politics being thrown at you, meeting so many people, trying to get the TV series, and having responsibilities you didn't expect to have, all contributed to you being able to practice your forgiveness and get it up to a much higher level than you would have if you had stayed in Maine, which you could have done. Don't forget, there are different dimensions of time and different scenarios available to you depending on the choices you make at the level of the mind. But the Holy Spirit always decides what's best for you based on those decisions. Gary, that's great, but wait a minute. What about all that stuff about the script being written and those who are to meet shall meet and everyone must play his part? How does everything happen that's supposed to happen if I don't come back again? Arden, you're being linear. There's something you're forgetting about when it comes to you having that final lifetime as Persa and Cindy as me. That lifetime has already happened. Everything happened all at once, and according to the Course, it's already over. You're reviewing mentally that which has gone by, remember? It's like watching a movie. Now, let's say you're watching a movie in a theater with 50 other people, and you get up and you walk out. Isn't the movie still going? Don't the other people still see it? The fact that you're not there has no effect on the movie. It's two different things, apples and oranges. The movie keeps right on going for those who are there to see it. If you wake up from the dream and no longer see it, it has no effect on those who do. They still have to wake up in order to stop seeing the dream movie that they call life and see their real life instead, which is the life of God. So I'm going to pause for a moment because I'm realizing that I think what I've just been reading, and we've been reading this past hour, is where we were a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's because I've scanned the pages while I was in California to read last week. Doesn't this starting to sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely. Yeah. I recognize it completely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Didn't we already read this? And they go, wait a minute. And I kept saying that. And then I realized, oh, I left the bookmark in my physical book, but then where we left off. But I realized I scanned several pages to read last Saturday and forgot that we had read them, but I didn't update my bookmark. So, but that's okay. I think we've been reading some very important stuff again, and it bears repeating, as Gary's teachers are
obviously we need to hear it.
I want to point out, yeah, exactly. It's not, repetition is not only a good idea, it's essential. And in this case, we happen to be repeating a particularly helpful section in Gary's fourth book. So, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, we came up to my bookmark. So,
yeah. Okay. Great. Great.
So that's where we ended up, and we said we were going to go back. Remember, we said that we might go back and.
Well,
and,
we did.
Yeah. So it happened. Our prediction was correct.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're exactly where we are now.
So do you want to pick up?
Sure. Okay. And again, this is just so spectacular. This whole idea that the script is written has such a huge impact on the way that I see things, because, you know, recognizing that it's already over, done, and whatever, you know, is happening now, I'm just reviewing. And as, you know, as they're saying here, that at any moment you could just walk out of the theater. And, you know, and but also in the Manual for Teachers, Jesus does tell us that you have a choice. You can stay in the theater and you can help others who appear to be in great fear. You know, that there is a purpose for you here in this world, just like he did. He recognized it. He left the theater, but then he recognized, oh, I can come back and do much, you know, much more to advance salvation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Bodhisattva thing, right? So,
yep.
And Jesus and Art and Apursa, you know, obviously they've already gone beyond. So, you know, why are they here talking to Gary? You know, well, because they're in the script. The script is written. In the script it said, you know, this little conundrum will show up. This thing will be an enigma. You won't be able to figure it out. People will be wondering, how did this happen? The future came to the past to tell the, you know, people in the past to read A Course in Miracles. It's almost like a sci-fi movie, and yet here it is happening before us. And you know, do we, you know, what do we do with this thing that these folks, you know, they volunteered to come here and talk to him to wake us up, but that was all in the script as well.
Right. So it's really just a part of our mind that chose this mechanism. And in this particular case, we chose the mechanism of reading a few of the same pages we read a week ago from the same illusory characters that are here to remind us that we're illusory characters to the extent that we believe that we're separate, but hopefully to help us remember that the self that we all share and are eternally is really where it's at. And so that's part of the script of this particular timeline of the script, that you know, the character named Bruce and the character named Lynn are reading the stories of the the book of the character of Gary and Art and Persa. You know, those characters and you know, making it all part of the waking up process for ourselves. Right?
Yeah, exactly. They actually said, I thought I was having deja vu. Yes, you
deja
were.
Deja vu all over again, right?
So I'll continue reading. This
okay.
is really good because we're talking about, okay, and I remember so clearly when I think about this, how Jesus in chapter 4 says, I will substitute for your ego if you will let me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be concerned about the minutia of your life, because I will make sure that it continues to operate with or without your presence. You know, that's basically what he's saying. You can leave this and everything is going to be just fine. Nothing's going to go wrong.
It's kind of like the autonomic nervous system in the body. You know, it's just you don't have to say, okay, you know, several times a minute and, you know, okay, heart beat, okay, beat again, okay, lungs exhale, lungs inhale, okay, circulatory system, I want you to pump the blood, you know, all the places, and, you know, and digestive juices, I want you to go here, you know. We don't have to do all that stuff. I mean, it's automatic. But eventually, you know, we get to the point where choosing the Holy Spirit as our thought system and as our teacher becomes automatic, and then the things in the world that normally would bug us and we would have to work through and agonize over. It's like, well, you know, if we practice the forgiveness that Course in Miracles talks about, it becomes this automatic thing, and then we just automatically forgive ourselves for the decision-making faculty of the mind, as Ken points out, Ken Wapnick, that's really where the Course is directed. It's not directed at the Bruce and the Lynn. It's directed at the decision-making faculty in the mind that we all forgot that we had, that chooses between those two thought systems. And once we choose the thought system of forgiveness and inclusion and shared interest and trusting our inner kindness teacher, then everything just seems to fall into place. Doesn't mean the world is magically perfect in terms of how egos see things, but it just means that we see a forgiven world, and that's where the real beauty is. We see that we see the innocence behind the form. We see the perfection behind the stick figures and the puppets and the dream characters that we think we are. And that's where the beauty comes in, and we can afford to smile and experience a gentle loving kindness toward everything, because we see that everything really is all of spirit and not just a part of it.
Exactly. And it's just a story that we made up.
Yeah.
Once you start seeing that, it's just, and it's so clear, it's so easy. You know, he gives us exercises to practice to see that we're making up the story. And if we just do that, you know, eventually one of them is going to stick, is what, you know, has been my experience, is that, you know, one time or another, you know, you get to see that. And seeing from the side of, like, above the battleground, seeing from the side of the Holy Spirit where you can actually see. You don't need to see the purpose of things, because there really is no purpose to anything. But if you, it's like reading the story from the end. You know, you already know what the whole outcome is, and then you can go back and read the story, and you can see, oh, well, this happened, so this could happen, though this could happen, so this could happen. Here's the chain of events that led to this happy ending where I am right now. You can look at all those things from here, from the point of view where you think you're still in the story and you don't know, you haven't seen the happy ending. If you can just assume that it already happened, because this is what A Course in Miracles is telling me, it's already happened, the happy ending is here, then all I can do is watch what happens and say, wow, what an amazing occurrence.
mm-hmm.
Who would have ever imagined that?
Who would have thunk it, huh?
Who would have thunk that? And then you just go through your life with this sense of, like, curiosity and wonder, because you can't make this stuff up. You know, I mean, really, it is the imagination of the Holy Son of God is vast and quite filled with events. I mean, we made event upon event upon event upon event. But now, you know, what we're hearing is that if the events continue, whether or not I'm there, not because they're still going on, but because the museum that holds them still stands. As long as my ego is in charge, the theater is still there. And so the point is to come to the place where there is no theater and there is no movie, no event, no museum, nothing. There's only reality. That's a whole different thing.
But meanwhile, we have a very amusing show seen from the right perspective that leads gently to forgiving what we see on the screen as the characters that we think we are. And then gradually we shift our identity to the people sitting next to Jesus in the theater seats, passing the popcorn and forgiving what we see, because we're forgiving really the guy in the projection booth, which is us, because we're all the same thing. We're all playing all the parts. So we're forgiving the director, the producer, the choreographer, we're the screenwriter that puts all this together, and seem to initiate this you know, vastly complex sequence of events, but it's all about forgiveness. It's all about seeing that we can forgive what appears in front of our face at any given moment, and that's our where the emphasis needs to be until we start getting glimpses of that more complete reality, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And looks like our time is up.
I just have one quick announcement.
Okay.
If I can. The Miracle Share Conference, we decided because all of us are putting this together just have been swamped with things to do. We're postponing that until January 11th through the 13th, 2019. So you might want to mark those dates on your calendars. It was going to be in October, but we've changed the dates to January 11th through 13th, and hoping that people can attend in that time frame. So that's about it, and you can find more details on ACIM blog of all the stuff that we do, and as well as the Miracle Share website will reflect that, other things I could announce, but I know we're out of time. So anyway, thank you again, as always, Lynn, and have a great week, everyone. Love to all.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. And yeah, that was the Miracle Share. Uh-huh. And that is the one that's put on by, I believe, Craig Villarubia and
Craig, Danielle, and Corinne,
Danielle and Craig and Corinne. Yeah, so that's an online workshop, and it is wonderful. You have basically an hour with a teacher, and then, part with a teacher, and then part question and answers. I'm not sure if that's how this can work.
It's 30 minutes of video and 30 minutes of live phone and Q&A. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so very cool.
Yeah.
So that'll be in January, and maybe a lot more people will be able to attend it then, because
exactly.
I know a lot of stuff is going on. That was October, right?
That was the original plan, was to make the fourth one in October. But the fourth one is now going to be in January 2019, the 11th, 12th, and 13th. And because it's virtual, you know, if you don't happen to have those days free and are busy, you can always watch and listen after the fact, anytime.
That's right. And it is really, really cool, really fun. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Bruce. And
thank you, Lynn.
Right now, we're going to turn the mic over to Iris and Carrie for, I believe, they're going to be doing the daily lesson. So I'll see you next week, Bruce.
Likewise. Thanks.